Today's episode of Locked On Suns is brought to you by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful diamond ring. They're all launching exclusively on January 18th at BlueNile.com. This exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches again on January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively on BlueNile.com.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The NBA returns tonight, but we still have one more day of preview content here on Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On PHX Suns. You can follow me on Twitter and the Locker Room app at Brendan Kleen 14. Could not be more excited for today's show. One more day until Suns basketball. Hope you all are as excited as I am for the season. But to finish off our preview coverage here, we'll have one more show for you tomorrow. I'm not sure who that will be. It'll either be a very special guest, a member of the Phoenix Suns organization, or I might hold that episode for Friday and give you guys a mailbag going into the season. We'll see. We'll see what I do here. For those who are not familiar, I cover the NBA and the Phoenix Suns at Forbes, at Dime Mag, at The Step Back, and of course, right here for you guys on Locked On Phoenix Suns. This is a show you come to when you want to know what is going on with the Suns and how it fits into the broader conversation around the NBA. And today, that means contract extensions. Contract extension deadline was today in the NBA, and we saw a few that I think can teach us a little bit about Mikal Bridges in particular, and Cam Johnson down the line. Cam Johnson going into his second season, so still a little ways away. A reminder, NBA players can get that contract extension, rookie contract players, young players, after their third season in the league. So Bridges will be eligible for one, as will DeAndre Ayton. After this season, Cam Johnson will be eligible in the summer of 2022. So, most urgently, Mikal Bridges, and it's time to start thinking about his market. As crazy as it sounds, we've only seen this guy for what feels like a little while, but in reality, it's time to start considering this. So today, Monday, what we saw were two contracts that can be informative here. Jonathan Isaac, 4 years, $80 million. Now, I'm really surprised. It feels to me like this is more of an extension of a kind of a kind hand by the Magic more than anything. $80 million guaranteed over four seasons after next season, this upcoming season, is a really risky thing on the part of the Magic. For those who don't remember, Jonathan Isaac tore his ACL in the bubble right after he came back from a second major knee injury. So Isaac is out for the entire season and now will be coming off of two major knee injuries. And still, I mean, just partially because of those, but partially just because he's so young, hasn't even necessarily put it all together, so to speak, in terms of his talent. So that one is a risk and almost sort of its own type of consideration. But in the end, it kind of seems like Isaac got the contract he might have gotten if none of those knee injuries had happened. So let's leave that one there. The other one is OG Anunoby, 4 years, $72 million. That one feels right on the money. 4 years, $72 million, that is about $18 million a year. And that feels pretty reasonable. There was also, over the weekend, Kyle Kuzma for 3 years and $40 million. That's $13 million. Annually. So we're seeing from 13, just over 13 to 20 when it comes to Isaac. That's sort of the wing forward group this time around, which Mikal Bridges obviously fits in. 2019, we saw much more in the way of extensions, of non-maximum extensions especially, which I don't expect Bridges to be a max player coming out of next season. I just don't think, unless he really, really escalates his shot creation this season, which I think he will show a lot more offensively, but, you know, guys who get the max are like Jason Tatum, and I just don't really think it's reasonable to expect that of Bridges in just one season. So we're looking at these sub-max players. Let's look at what happened in 2019. We had Royce O'Neal, 4 years, 36, so that's 9 annually. Dylan Brooks, 3 years, 35, that's almost 12 annually. I think he had some non-guarantees, if I'm remembering correctly. Jaylen Brown, 4 years, 103, that was the top end. 4 years, $86 million for Buddy Hield. That's 21 plus million. Brown's was almost 26 million annually. And Caris LeVert to round things out, 3 years, $52 million, which is about 17, 18 annually. Very sort of different players, all of them. But in that case, for whatever reason, it was more of the wing kind of swing man, guard, smaller wing group of players. Brooks, Hield, LeVert, more of twos. O'Neal, like a big two, combo three. And Jaylen Brown, like a 2-3-4. He's sort of a unicorn. So different kinds of players all up and down over the past couple of seasons. But that's sort of the range. Somewhere from O'Neal's $9 million annually to Jaylen Brown's $26 million. And guys, I'm really feeling like Mikal Bridges is going to be more in the 26 neighborhood, if I'm being completely honest. Like, you look, Jaylen Brown is a little bit different because he has proven it in the playoffs. He was a better offensive player, and he had a streak of a couple consecutive seasons where he was a really strong shooter. So those are a few things Bridges doesn't have and won't necessarily have. Although if he can shoot again, better than league average this season on a decent number of attempts and kind of diversify his shot profile a little bit, take some more above the break threes and maybe even some pull-up threes in addition to just more offensive diet overall, that's going to go a long way for him, but he won't have done it in the playoffs. He won't have done it probably with the ball in his hands as much as we saw Brown do just because of some of the absences that the Celtics experienced, even dating back to that first conference final season when he and Tatum were kind of the two and three on the team and they just were ahead of schedule. Like, none of that will be factoring into Bridges. So he probably won't be making $26 million. But everything besides that, you kind of feel like Bridges fits more into the Jaylen Brown mold than just about anybody on this list. Like, he's probably will have proven even more than Jonathan Isaac in terms of availability, especially. Bridges doesn't miss games hardly ever. Offensively, I would think you could say that if Bridges does have that type of shooting season and it improves and increases his usage rate this season, he'll be in a better spot than Isaac. OG Anunoby, I think overall, I kind of see them as similar value propositions going forward over the course of their careers, but Anunoby wasn't in that playoff run when Toronto won the championship. He hasn't really performed in the playoffs until this season, this past year in the bubble, where he was pretty good, but is still, you know, overall, this season for Anunoby will be more like Bridges last season. You know, he's just a little behind because they had so many guys ahead of him. He dealt with injuries and just had some bad luck in terms of when he got injured. So Anunoby's at $18 million. Jaylen Brown is at 26. That's sort of the range I see for Bridges. As for Cam Johnson, I think the shooting contracts are a little bit more informative here. The thing about Joe Harris and Davis Bertans, guys who in their own right made $15 plus million, 20, you know, up to 20, I think is what Harris was at. So those weren't necessarily extensions. These were guys who were a little bit more proven on their third or fourth contracts. So it's a little different, but the market is high for guys who can do what Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson can do. All right, guys, closing out our two-part Western Conference tiers preview with Jackson Frank over of the Step Back and Dime. If that sounds familiar, yes, we are coworkers in a couple of places. Hope you enjoyed part one. If you have not listened, go check that out right now. And if you like what you're hearing, subscribe and follow our show. Do not miss anything. I have a ton of fun stuff coming for you guys, including that interview with a mystery member of the Suns organization. Very excited for you guys to hear that one. But let's get back into it with Jackson here. Before we do that, though, I want to tell you about the first sponsor of today's show, which is betonline.ag. Who is ready for some football? College football heads into bowl season, and there are some big matchups right around the corner. The NFL regular season is wrapping up with the playoff picture becoming clearer, and NBA over-under lines, the most fun part of this time of year. I told you guys, hit that Suns over 38.5 is absurd. I think this team's going to be far better than that, and even though they're favored to hit the over, that's some good money. Just go make some free money, please, on me. And on betonline.ag. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust here on the Locked On Podcast Network, and that is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, for your 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action, and don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Back here, rounding out our Western Conference rankings, our Western Conference tiers with Jackson Frank. You can find his work at Dime Up Rocks, at The Step Back over at Fansided, as well as Liberty Ballers, where he covers the Sixers, who are not a Western Conference team. But we did the first two tiers on Monday, which were the same same seven teams for us, and just in a little bit of a different order. That was the Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, Jazz, Mavs, Blazers, and Suns. And you can listen to that episode to get a ton of Suns stock, a ton of that second tier and where teams could stack up, and a little bit of disagreement along the way. I'm a little higher on the Jazz than Jackson. Jackson's actually a little higher on the Suns than I am, coincidentally, but let's start things off with your number 8 team, because that was actually part of tier 2 for you. Who do you got?
I've got the Rockets there still. I don't expect the team that I have ranked 8th to be the team that plays most of the season in Houston. I do think James Harden's going to get traded early on, but for now, I just have a tough time. My brain can't foresee the idea that a James Harden-led team is going to be in a tier that's lower than Portland, that's lower than Utah, that's lower than Phoenix, you know? And so maybe that's off base for me, and maybe part of your projections and anticipating the James Harden trade package in there. But I like the addition of Christian Wood a lot. I think he gives them a lot of versatility in pick and rolls, because he's an awesome play finisher and he can space the floor as well. That's never really something Harden's had, or the last few years. They had Capella, who was a great lob threat, but then they went to the small ball 5 and they didn't really have a roll threat. So they had the floor spacing that Capella couldn't offer, but John Wall's look good in preseason. I'm still pretty skeptical of Wall, but I do think, you know, there is some validity of his burst looking better than I anticipated, so having to price that in. I think David Nwaba can help them too as a defender. I know he's kind of like that every kind of, you know, blogger and NBA Twitter person likes, yeah. But like, he can really defend. Like, it's there's nothing about it. Like, he's strong, he's really good laterally. He helps there. I still think DeMarcus Cousins can help to an extent too. They've got a new offense. It's going to be more motion-based, more screen and cut. And I think that really suits Cousins well as a guy who can work from the high post and also space the floor. So I just think there's enough in place around James Harden for this team to be, you know, one that makes the playoffs and maybe contends for a 6, 7, 8 seed.
If Harden's there, I agree with everything you said. I mean, like you said, my being down on them is just about the assumption that a trade happens. It sounds like there's some momentum that it might happen before the start of the season. Maybe this episode's not going up till Tuesday, which is the start of the regular season, so of course it could happen by then, and we will have talked about it, and now we won't know where he'll end up. So probably not too much discussion necessary there. It is disappointing to me, all things considered, that we won't get to see this team with like a happy and healthy Harden. And I guess he's not unhealthy, but coming to camp late and not being engaged. And then if Russ had still been around, I think, you know, they have an interesting group of wings. They have Christian Wood. They have DeMarcus Cousins. It just would have been a kind of a breath of fresh air compared to what they've rolled out there for the past couple of seasons. But it doesn't seem like it's meant to be. Even if Harden does start the year there, I really don't feel like it's very likely that he finishes it. So they are down to my tier four. My tier three, which included the number eight team, as well as the numbers 9 and 10. So that's rounds out kind of the playoff field for me with those two play-in spots as well. Number eight is New Orleans. I just felt like watching them. I watched, I think, two full games of theirs, or at least parts of two games in the preseason. And I think kind of it seems like the knock on them is the shooting. They don't have enough of it in the starting lineup, especially. They're not really a deep team this year after being kind of thought to be deep, at least with interesting young talent last year. It seems like you can't really expect guys like Nikhil Alexander Walker to contribute right now. You probably can't trust their draft picks this year to do that either. So that's kind of the negative. But on the positive, they were tops in offensive rebounding rate in the preseason. So that strength with Adams and Zion in the middle is already showing. They grabbed over a third of their misses in the preseason, which is just insane. And they have four guys in that starting lineup who can create their own shot between Bledsoe, I guess, depending on how you feel about Lonzo, but he can. And then Zion and Ingram. Like, I think as a regular season team and as sort of like a high floor type of roster, I don't really think that it's all that bad. And they have a lot of good players, even if they don't have a roster that makes a ton of sense together. And they might not have 10 guys you love, but they have eight. And I think it's going to kind of rise above the fit problems and just be like a bunch of good players kind of winning 500 or so basketball.
Yeah, I have New Orleans in the same tier as you. And just circling back to Houston, I totally agree that I would have them in maybe the third tier at best, probably the fourth tier when they trade Harden. But yeah, New Orleans should be good. I caught a lot of their game against the Heat, I think, last week, and I watched some of their game against the Bucks. And it's like, it's Zion's incredible because, like, you know, they have this poor spacing, but it doesn't even matter to him. Like, it just doesn't affect him as a finisher, really, because either he just has he knows how to, like, avoid, you know, the congested paint, or he just is so strong that he bowling balls two guys out of the way. And then if he misses, he grabs his own rebound. If he doesn't grab it, then Adams is there too, because Adams doesn't face the floor. So, I think this team should be good. I do worry about the loss of Drew, even if I think, as a regular season players, Drew and Eric Bledsoe are maybe kind of similar in value to an extent. I think Drew's ability to get into the paint so consistently and create his own shot, especially from kind of that intermediate range where Bledsoe doesn't really have that type of game, will hurt them to an extent. But this should be a good team for sure. I'm curious to see how Bledsoe does because, you know, you mentioned he can create his own shot. He's obviously very much kind of a downhill explosive guy who likes to get in the paint and can finish well there. I'm curious to see how the spacing affects him because he's way smaller and not as strong as Zion. But because I don't think we've seen him in preseason yet, if I recall.
I don't think he
played. And so kind of looking at the new, I've watched a lot. I'm trying to think if I've seen him, but I don't think I have. So I'm curious to see how, you know, lack of floor space affects him there. It doesn't worry me with Ingram because Ingram is a guy who is a pretty awesome tough shot maker and he can do so from the mid-range, from three. He's not someone who's getting the rim a ton. Neither is Lonzo. So, I think this is definitely a good team that's good enough to snag the 8 seed, assuming Harden's gone. But I just have them a little lower, but I definitely, you know, if Zion is healthy and he's playing 32 minutes a night and he's playing 68 games this year and takes another step forward as a player, like, I mean, they could definitely outpace, you know, where I have them because, you know, for all the hand-wringing about Zion, their issues, you know, his defense was definitely pretty abysmal last year. Like, the dude averaged 22.5 points and 6 rebounds and 61.5% true shooting in, like, 28 minutes a night. You can't say, okay, let's put him at per 36 because his condition was part of the reason his numbers are low, but like 29-8-3-1 as a rookie on 61.5% true shooting per 36 minutes is like, it's insane. Like he was really good when he played and he looks good now. Like I don't have any worries about his injuries. If he's like an all-star level player this year, which I think is definitely in the cards based on what I thought of him as a prospect, New Orleans should be really good. And I can definitely see them maybe kind of sneaking into that. Maybe the lower end of the tier above us, but this should be a really good team for sure.
My number nine is Golden State. I watched their full game against the Kings this morning. You guys are welcome doing all the prep just to give you the best analysis. I sat through an entire Warriors Kings game. But it was actually interesting because I haven't watched them, either one of those teams. I have to like make myself kind of eat the broccoli with the Kings. I just feel like they've been the same team for 3 years now, give or take a few pieces. And so I did want to see what was different. The Kings are not in this tier, so we can save that for a second from now. But Steph and the defense in the transition offense, I feel like is a recipe for enough to kind of be in that play-in conversation. I think their defense is going to be, for a regular season team that's well-coached and has a system that it obviously believes in and is proven and at least has the big men to kind of anchor it. Like, that's the other thing, is they've lost a lot, but between Draymond and who knows how much center he plays, but Draymond, Marquese Chris, who I think they really believe in and is good enough as a regular season guy, in my opinion. And then Kevon Looney, who's looked really good according to a lot of Warriors people and in the game that I watched. And then whatever James Wiseman gives them, like, I think they'll be pretty good defensively. Steph looks like Steph, and, you know, you're going to bake in some injuries there. But I think, you know, they have some athletes in transition as well between Wiggins and Bazemore and Oubre and Wanamaker's like a fine backup point. Like, they have enough on this roster where I just have a hard time imagining them being awful, but the offense is going to suck when Steph's off the floor, especially in the half court. And if he's hurt a little bit, if he sits back to backs here and there, just to kind of keep him going, like, they're going to really lose some ugly games when and if that happens.
Yeah. I think you covered a lot of the basis why, you know, regarding the optimism around, Golden State. But yeah, I just have a hard time betting against Steph. I know he's going to be 33 midway through the season. But I mean, he's a dude who is like, was a top 47 in a finals game a year and a half ago, when they didn't have Clay or KD, against the eventual champions, obviously. So, and he's a 2-time MVP, like, you know, I don't want to just rile a bunch of credentials, but like, and he's looked good in preseason. I haven't caught a full game, but I've seen enough to, you know, say, okay, that's the Steph Curry that we know from those. But he's not going to be as quick or as agile as he was in 2015, 2016. But he's still a really good player, remains the best shooter in the NBA, remains the best off-ball player in the NBA. Just a guy that I have a trouble, you know, seeing a team with him on it, healthy, leading the way, being worse than a team that has a chance to, you know, make the playoffs. Kind of similar to the Harden idea. I just think guys that are good enough at that caliber are going to be with enough kind of complimentary talent around them should find a way to make it work to an extent, obviously. But Draymond is the guy I'm most curious about to see kind of how he comes back from a year where he definitely was coasting. So,
yeah. Do you see them? I mean, I think it was Nekias Duncan. I read his Pacific Division preview this morning too, to start thinking about some of these teams. And he had like the closest they can get to the death lineup would be like Curry, those three wings with Oubre, Wiggins, and Bazemore, and then Draymond. Do you? I mean, granted, neither of us cover the Warriors or know anything, but do you think that they would even bother? Like, would you bother trying to go to a small Draymond at the five lineup this year, or would you just say like, let's make sure we defend like hell, and then we don't need to do the offensive stuff by getting small?
No, I would definitely go to it, especially with this roster, because they don't have a stretch five, right? Like, from what I'm looking at and what I recall, like, there's no one there, you know, because if you play Draymond at the four, then you're basically saying, okay, we're going to have two poor/non-shooters on the floor with Steph. And they don't have Clay. You know, Oubre is someone who's a good scorer, but he's more of a downhill slasher, obviously, as you know. Wiggins is someone who's always thought could be a good three-point shooter, who's never been there. So I could definitely see them going to that for both defensive and offensive purposes, because, like, you don't want to put out a lineup that has four poor shooters around Steph, and it's like, okay, great, he has all this gravity, but, you know, we can't do anything off of it because anytime he touches the ball, he's quadruple teamed or whatever. I definitely think we'll see some of that stuff this year. Just because, as I mentioned, like, Draymond is probably still going to be their best rim protector this year. Because he was still good defensively last year. He just really did not try at all offensively, which is where the issue was mainly. I know Draymond has maybe a little bit of an injury that doesn't sound major. I saw it a couple days ago, but whenever he does start playing, I think they'll be fine. I could definitely see some small ball stuff because it'll probably be their best lineup in terms of talent and optimization.
Yeah, the talent part is for sure. I mean, unless one of these centers, like if Chris somehow breaks out, if Wiseman's just incredible as a rookie, maybe things are different. But I guess you're right in that it gets Bazemore on the floor with their two starting wings, and that's probably their five best players. That's so depressing to say about the Warriors that Kent Bazemore and Andrew Wiggins factor into the best lineup that they can put out there. But it is what it is. Who was your number nine? Was it Golden State as well?
I had my number nine without Houston. I had New Orleans at number nine. I had New Orleans nine, Golden State eight. You know, with Houston in there, 9 and 10. So we're in the same kind of idea of how we view these teams.
Okay, let's close out this segment then with my number 10, which is Memphis. And I just think it's pretty simple with them. Without Jaren Jackson to start the season, no Justice Winslow to start the season. They've been starting Grayson Allen dating back to the bubble. I just think this isn't a very deep team and they don't have a lot of shooting. And I like a lot of their young talent, but you're also talking about like Desmond Bane was playing a really big role in the preseason. And I'm not saying he's going to be bad. I actually think he's going to be pretty good. If anyone's listened to Jackson and I's last podcast, we agree there. But, you know, you're talking to me about having to count on a bunch of rookies. I'm not really sold on it. I actually think if they start Brandon Clark at the four, depending on where his jump shot is, I feel like the theme of this podcast is me trying to limit how much shooting teams have for whatever reason. But I do like put Kyle Anderson at the three and Clark at the four and take Grayson Allen out of the starting lineup, I think could actually be a little better for them. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but they just don't have very much depth while those two guys are out. And even when Winslow does come back, I'm not terrifically excited about how he fits in with the group. And we haven't seen him play basketball in a really long time at this point.
Yeah. What Memphis really needs is wings who can just bomb from three. And I mean, even though Crowder was really bad, he didn't shoot well from three last year with Memphis, like that he was useful for them in offensively because he shot a lot of threes for them. And that has value with next to Ja and Jaren and Brandon Clark and whatnot. So, you know, Winslow's health is seemingly an always question at this point, so it's really tough to bank anything from him. And as you mentioned with Bane, even though I like Bane too, like I'm a huge, you know, advocate of Bane as a prospect, relying on a rookie, you know, even though he's already 22, to really be a key rotation player or kind of a critical rotation player for you is a pretty steep ask. So I think this team should be good. Ja has taken huge step forwards pretty much every year in recent years, you know, from his high school days to his freshman to sophomore year at Murray State to last year when he basically just like added a floater to his game. He had like no intermediate game in college and all of a sudden, boom, had like one of the best floaters in the NBA last year. So I'm not putting anything past him. He looked really good in preseason. So I think he'll take a step forward, maybe be kind of, you know, not quite an all-star level player, but like, you know, top 40-ish, top 45 guy, whereas last year I think he's more of a top 70, 75 just as an estimation. Which is not a knock on him by any means. It's a very, if anyone's listening, like a very good spot for Ricky to be, especially when carrying such a huge workload offensively. But yeah, so I think a lot of it's going to be contingent on, you know, where did Brandon Clark get better? Where did Ja get better? How good can Jaren be defensively when he comes back? Because he was not very good defensively last year.
If they could get to a situation, sorry to cut you off, where Clark and Jackson are like so good and fit so well together and can hold up defensively where they don't have to play Valanciunas, that would be a really big like accomplishment no matter where they finish. Like that's kind of the stuff I'm looking at.
Yeah, obviously I think they're going to need Valanciunas' interior scoring is huge for them, but I think I see what you mean in terms of like long-term development. If you can get to a spot where Jaren and Clark are your four and five, that can actually hold up defensively because that lineup, the last time I checked, could not hold up defensively at all. If you can get to that spot, yeah, definitely a really nice, you know, step forward for your long-term plans with this core. But yeah, I think this team is good, or they've got really good young pieces, as you mentioned, but just not enough high-end talent to really compete for a big playoff spot. You definitely see them sneaking into the play-in, obviously with you having them 10th, that's what you're getting at, but being an actual playoff team that doesn't have to worry about the plan. I really don't see that in the cards for them this year, which is all right. Ja's young, Jaren's young. They've got a really good foundation of pieces that fit around this core. You don't want to use developmental year, but you really are looking to see what step forward these young guys take.
And you need to start to consolidate too. So it's a good chance to get an idea of what you have in some of these pieces, you know. I think Jaren will be eligible for an extension after the season. And you're getting to that point where your young core is getting to be in its second, third, fourth season. So, you know, you already paid Dylan Brooks it's like, let's kind of start to see what's there. So in that way, it's kind of like maybe the Kings of the past couple of years, except obviously Sacramento never really took that step forward, but Memphis could kind of use this year as a jumping off point. And I'm excited to watch him. I mean, Jaw's incredible, and getting to see him do his thing is no complaint for me. But yeah, maybe a little bit of a step back. They were eighth in the standings last year. They might be a little lower this year. But let's take a quick break, and then we'll rapid fire through to round out to the Western Conference. Don't go anywhere, because I want to tell you guys about my favorite protein bar on the market, and that is because it doesn't taste like a protein bar whatsoever. It actually tastes just like a candy bar, and that is Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. I've been telling you guys about the new flavors, the six brand new flavors of their total of 18 over at Built Bar lately, but I want to tell you about the originals, the ones that earned them their place in our hearts, and that is peanut butter brownie, salted caramel, mint brownie. Mint brownie is delicious. It has like a soft, green, minty inner, and it's just so soft and nice. Again, just like a candy bar. It's covered in 100% chocolate and soft and easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious person, anyone trying to lose or maintain weight, or anyone who's on a keto diet or any sort of low sugar diet, because these things are not crammed with calories and sugar and carbs. They are crammed with protein, and that is just about it. Let's take peanut butter, for example. 19 grams of protein, 180 calories only, and just 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. It's just that light snack to get you after a workout, get you through the afternoon hunger pangs maybe. Substitute in for a snack. It's that healthy addition to your everyday diet that is just what you need, and it tastes amazing. Free cooler right now with every purchase over at Built Bar while supplies last. So please take advantage. It will only last for about a week, they say. So go to BuiltBar.com right now and use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. That's all one word, the name of our network, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Back here for the final segment of our Western Conference Power Rankings, our Western Conference Tiers with Jackson Frank. I don't have a ton to say about a lot of these teams, so hopefully we can make this quick. I have the Rockets here. They are actually, I had them 13th. So this is just assuming, like, you know, you get a weird John Wall season where he's not healthy, and it's just, you know, a bunch of shooters with not necessarily a lot of creation to get them open. And, you know, it's going to be a weird season in Houston if Harden's not there. So we've talked about Houston a lot, so I did just want to say where I had them. But number 11 for me is actually Sacramento, who I briefly brought up a minute ago. I just don't see them having enough talent to get into the, I mean, I guess if I have them 11th, like, they could break into the play-in game, but it just, I think the defense is going to be pretty awful. And the starting front court of Marvin Bagley, who I'm interested to finally just see get on the court for a full season, hoping he can do that. Rashawn Holmes has never been a player I've been high on. I don't really love that pairing in that neither one of them is really a threat to space the floor or to shoot. They're doing some interesting stuff offensively, you know, with Luke Walton there, that to get some of these shooters open and stuff, but I don't know. I just, it doesn't make sense as a roster to me right now. And I think the defense is going to be bad. I think they have just like less talent than they did last year. I don't know. The Kings depress me.
Yeah. So I've got them a spot lower, where I guess too, we're all a little off because I priced Harden being on Houston into my rankings, but yeah, I've got the Spurs in this spot, but yeah, it's just a worse team. And Luke Walton is a terrible coach. They played really slowly last year after running a bunch with Dave Yeager there, and that worked well. They were,
and you have De'Aaron Fox on your team. Yeah.
Why would you play slow? And you've got Buddy Hield on your team too, who is a great transition threat because he has limitless range off the catch. You've got Marvin Bagley, obviously. He was an awesome open court athlete. He's a good athlete in general, but you know, any athlete is going to see their tools amplified in the open floor. So, yeah, I don't love that. Buddy Hield seems kind of discontent, or very much discontent. They lost Bogdan for nothing. It made no sense at all. Yeah, this roster, you know, it just is a, like you said, it bums me out. There is kind of the, there's a foundation for a way to play, get up and down a ton, let Fox do his thing. But they have an awful coach and someone who doesn't really seem to want to do that. So, yeah, I don't have a lot of hope for the Kings. You know, I thought Fox got better last year for sure, with a lot more patience and, you know, kind of a ball handler, better leveraging his speed and kind of varying his speed. Was better getting to the rim or get better drawing fouls, embracing contact. I think was more manipulative as a passer, but I don't think he's good enough, you know, to overcome the limitations around him on the roster as well as on the coaching staff. So just not a great team and one that bums me out because, as you mentioned, you know, was kind of on the rise a couple of years ago with Dave Yeager, and you saw kind of the foundation of something that could be really interesting and fun and a team to really enjoy watching on a night to night basis. But yeah, just kind of not the worst team in the league or anything, but nowhere close to a playoff spot. So that's just a really unfun place to be. I don't see the Kings really doing anything notable.
The good thing for them is this is a wing heavy draft and they have no wings at all on this roster. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's something for them to look forward to, for Kings fans to get excited about. But that's probably enough on them. The 12th team for me was Minnesota. I think Rubio will help. I think the offense could actually be like top half, if not, you know, a little better than that. Assuming, I guess, that the young guys that they do choose to play can improve there and not be as inefficient as like a Kogi and Culver were last year. But I also just think like the defense is going to be pretty bad. The coaching is not very good, similar to Sacramento. And they don't have really any depth in the front court. Like, they just cut Rondae Hollis-Jefferson for whatever reason, which I think maybe was a little overblown on Twitter because people like 12th men on Twitter. But it's just not much of a front court right now outside of Towns. Like, Jake Layman might start at the four, or, you know, Juancho Hernan Gomez. It's a weird roster and kind of unbalanced right now. And I think if this was an ideal situation for Minnesota, they probably would just be using this as a building year, but you can't do that for a decade straight. You got to start to win. So they're going to probably go into the year thinking that they're going to try to win.
Yeah. Yeah, this is just a really kind of similar to Sacramento, just a bummer of a roster and kind of an outlook. On the upside, at least they have Karl Anthony Towns, obviously, who's very, very good, a top 20-ish player. They have Anthony Edwards, who, you know, number one pick. But, yeah, this is not a team that I'm inspired by. I'll watch a decent amount of them because Cat is incredible. He's an incredible offensive talent. I like watching Rubio. But yeah, I really just do worry about the defense, especially. Pretty bad from what I've seen in preseason. Like D'Angelo Russell is a very bad defender. I think he has a lot of utility offensively, but yeah, this roster is, you know, a lot of warts defensively, not a lot of kind of poor fitting pieces. I'm not exactly sure what the vision is. You know, there's a lot of like non or poor shooting wings around Cat and D'Lo. Not a lot of great defensive insulation around those two either. So, yeah, kind of a head-scratching roster and one that I'm pretty bummed by.
All right, our last team that we have not talked about outside of the Thunder, who we don't need to talk about, is San Antonio, who you actually said you had 11th. I have them 14th, which does feel a little bit low considering Greg Popovich is the coach and they have some veteran talent that is at least going to be there until the trade deadline. But what do you like about San Antonio?
They're like solid players for them to be terrible. You know, I think you can at least maybe bank on the idea that one of DeMar DeRozan or LaMarcus Aldridge might get traded. In that case, yeah, you may knock him down a peg or two. Maybe if that sounds like I'm, you know, if it sounds like I'm contradicting myself with the Harden stuff, I think it's a lot less of what we've read that those guys were traded. So, but yeah, I like that. I think whenever Derek White does return, I think he's really key for them. Took a big step forward in terms of offensive progression last year in the bubble. Obviously, that was without LaMarcus Aldridge, so maybe there's kind of some worry about that continuing. But he's really good. Like, I just think he's like a nice, solid, like top 50, top 60 player. I think Kelly Johnson can take a step forward. I like Jakob Poeltl as a center. So just enough, you know, just enough competent coaching and competent roster for me to be too low on them. But this is not a tier by any means. I'm like, oh yeah, these teams kind of are maybe dark horses that could sneak into the play-in. It's just for me, you know, putting them over the other teams we've mentioned, it's just a matter of I like kind of how the roster fits a little more in the coaching there.
Yeah, the more I look at it, I kind of do feel like the top 10 for me, I don't really see much variance in, outside of like maybe a Steph injury or a Jaw injury or something like that. It feels like the top 10 is pretty locked in, at least in my mind. San Antonio for me, like, I guess I might be discounting that they were actually halfway decent last year, but you know, they were 23rd in defense. I don't think they're probably going to improve much. They might get worse playing more younger guys, and seems like they're going to start similarly to how they did in the bubble, although with Aldridge, of course, in the rotation. I'm interested to see if what Lonnie Walker can be, and if just kind of the accumulation of wing defense that they might have, even though it is young, could kind of show them an identity going forward. But yeah, I agree. I mean, they have a roster that's a little more cohesive, and they have Pop, and they have that infrastructure there with, you know, the shooting coach and the assistants that are obviously going to kind of insulate guys. Like, it's a young team, but not in the traditional sense of, you know, maybe some of the others we've talked about, like Sacramento and whatever, with a bad coach that you're not going to trust. So we'll see. We'll see how they turn out. I'm interested to watch them, but I don't think they'll be very good. And then rounding out things, we have Oklahoma City. Not much to say there. I mean, we're going to see how their young guys are, and they'll be leading the lottery race the entire way. But this was fun. Thanks for coming on, Jackson. It's a deep West, I guess, but it feels like it was good to kind of see that the Suns' optimism is not completely fabricated, and they should be able to get out of the play-in game at the very least.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you having me on this. You know, this is kind of maybe the first time I thought really in depth about, you know, kind of the West, and it was cool to bounce kind of ideas off of each other and whatnot. So yeah, I agree with you. It definitely helped kind of crystallize the tiers and how many teams definitely actually have a chance to make the playoffs this year. But yeah, I think kind of we're on very similar wavelengths, and the Suns should be good. Like, they're, you know, I kind of get the idea of the echo chamber, but like, writers and fans should all be, you know, all their optimism for the most part is justified. You know, you shouldn't be going and putting them in the first tier or anything, or saying they're going to be as good as the LA team. But I legitimately do think kind of anywhere after that, you know, as long as it's well-reasoned, has a case. I wouldn't put them above Denver personally, but I could see maybe the case for.
Alrighty, that closes us out here. Oh, my bad. Sorry, you cut out. So I thought you were done. Cool. I'll cut it. I'll end it there, and I can edit it together. That ends our marathon Western Conference preview podcast. We hope that was fun for you guys to think through. It should be a fun year for the Suns. They, like I've said before, got lucky not having to play a ton of these Pacific Division teams over and over with the schedule. Although we'll see what travel does for these guys, but the regular season starts tonight for most of you hearing that, and the Suns play Wednesday. So here we are. Basketball is right around the corner, and we hope you'll join us.